Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew. I'm here with Henry. Unfortunately, Josh can't be here with us. I guess I should first apologise for our lack of activity over the last few weeks. It's been a busy summer for all of us, so finding time to be able to record a podcast has been quite difficult. But me and Henry are here. It is a bright Tuesday morning, and Arsenal have had quite a positive summer, which is a little bit weird. I'm not used to it. Henry, have you enjoyed the last few weeks, the World Cup, and the lack of depressing 5-0 defeats at Anfield?
Yeah, but we've still got Manchester City and Chelsea to play in the first game, so we'll wait. But yeah, it's been quite nice. Our business is seemingly done for the most part. And besides this whole Gazidis debacle, everything from a negative standpoint has been quiet. So long may it continue.
Yeah, I agree. It was weird to see them be so efficient. I think whether it's been effective or not, time will tell. Yeah. I do have my doubts over some of the signings that they have made, but at least they've identified players and they've just gone and got them. They've not messed around, they've not delayed, they've not waited till deadline day and done a panic buy. They've just said, we want this player, so let's go and get him. And by really the first week of July, I think everything was essentially wrapped up and done and dusted, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, just to elaborate on what you just said there, I mean, I'm glad that they targeted positions, obvious positions of need, and addressed them. As you said, whether they work out in the long run, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, if someone else comes in at this point, it's an added bonus, but I'd be happy if the window closed tonight and we don't do any more business.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Let's start then with probably the biggest arrival of the summer, Lucas Torreira for £26-27 million, depending on what reports you believe. Do you think he's a good addition, first of all? What do you think we can expect from him both this year and obviously he's only 22, so moving forward? And are you happy that Arsenal haven't spent more than £30 million on a player, which, let's be honest, in today's market is not a big figure? So really, the individual signings that they've made have been relatively cheap, and Torreira's the most expensive of them at 26, 27.
I mean,
is that a good thing? Is that smart management, or is that a bit concerning?
Certainly, I think I made the point in one of the last podcasts that we did before the hiatus, if you will, that if Arsenal indeed had limited financial resources, they needed to be financially efficient, and I think this is the epitome of that kind of transfer. You're looking at a promising player, 22 years of age, who, despite not starting the first couple of games at the World Cup, really came to the fore during Uruguay's run in the competition.
Yep.
And I actually think he's a great signing because I think he improves Arsenal in a couple of ways, in that he himself can be the natural holding midfield player, and I think the team itself will be more solid because I think a midfield trio of Torreira, Xhaka and Ramsey is just more solid for the team overall and gives the team more balance.
Yeah. I think he's an excellent signing. He's the one I'm most excited about, that's for sure. I do have doubts over the other ones, but my only problem is that I said a lot of what I said about Torreira this summer about Xhaka two summers ago. And while I still think that Xhaka is a good player and has his moments and has a skill set that is useful to Arsenal midfield, I fear if Torreira will take the same trajectory where, say, the adaptation to the Premier League, the speed of the game, he's only 5'6", so maybe his lack of physical presence in the middle of midfield, perhaps those things become slightly concerning. I think he's a very good player and I'm very happy that Arsenal have him. But let's be honest, we've not seen him play yet.
Yep.
We've not seen him play 1 minute for Arsenal. I've gone back and watched a few games from Sampdoria, and he played very much like he played for Uruguay in the World Cup. scrappy, combative, committed, deceptively quick across the ground. He's a good player, and he's only 22. Arsenal are signing players of a good age, but there's still a long way to go, isn't there, for any foreign player coming to this country who's never played here before?
Certainly, and that's why I made the point about him playing alongside Xhaka, because you talk about the lack of physicality that Torreira brings. You can offset that with Xhaka's physicality. I mean, I go back to the game against Chelsea, I believe, at the start of last season when we were at Stamford Bridge and we had Iwobi and Welbeck in our team, and it was a weirdly defensive approach. And for large parts of that game, Xhaka and Ramsey dominated that midfield. So I think that's what those two could possibly do as a pairing. And I think that pairing is a really, really exciting prospect for Arsenal this coming season and hopefully beyond.
Yeah. I think the man who will really benefit from Torreira's arrival, assuming that he stays, is Aaron Ramsey. I think that this signing has been made with Ramsey in mind, to give him that freedom to roam throughout the pitch. As you said, he has those attacking instincts, and sometimes in a two, he can isolate his partner. But when you have Torreira as the holding midfielder and then Xhaka as well, Ramsey now has that license to really bomb forward without much awareness of the defensive exposure that he may be causing at the other end of the pitch. Let's move on to a couple of other signings. Leno and Socrates. Burn Leno from Bayer Leverkusen for around £20 million. Again, depends on who you read. Socrates, a centre-half from Borussia Dortmund for about £16 million. Again, depending on who you read. What do you make of these signings? Are you? There's been a lot of debate surrounding both. Some people are absolutely enamoured by them. Others are quite critical of them. Where do you stand on Leno and Socrates as Arsenal players?
On the Burn Leno signing, I'm elated that we brought him in. I'm aware of the fact that he's renowned, if you will, for making untimely errors and simple mistakes. He supposedly made a mistake in a behind-closed-doors friendly that Arsenal played recently. But most importantly, you look back at the games last season, Petr Cech is not at the level he once was, and we said it numerous times in the past, Andy, David Ospina does not inspire confidence in any way, shape or form. It looks like he's going to be leaving the club for a small fee in the near future. And I'm a lot happier heading into this season than last season in terms of our goalkeeper situation, because you have a viable competition now ongoing between Leno and Cech, or at least I assume that it will be Leno and Cech, and Martinez will be the three, seeing as Matt Macey's now gone out on loan. I'm a lot happier with our goalkeeper situation, because even if Leno doesn't quite hit the heights that we desire, you have Petr Cech, who will undoubtedly want to come in and solidify his spot and his legacy as a Premier League legend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've been quite critical of the Leno signing because of the mistakes. And we've seen Arsenal goalkeepers who have a propensity for making stupid errors, and it's rarely gone well. What does comfort me quite a lot, however, is that Emery has publicly stated, and in his decisions that he's made so far in this preseason, is backing it up. He stated that this is going to be an open competition between Leno and Petr Cech for the number one jersey. When Leno first signed, I initially presumed that he would be the starter, and I still expect him to win that competition. And I think it would be somewhat concerning if he didn't win that competition for Sven Mislintat's sake, who's probably the guy behind this signing, because you don't buy a keeper for £20 million. For him to just sit on the bench, even if he's only 26 and only sits on the bench for a year, you're buying a keeper for £20 million for him to be your starter from day one. Whether he actually does win the competition or not, I'm not sure. But that does provide me with a little bit of comfort that Emery is being realistic about the Leno signing, and he said, yes, this is a talented player, but he's not necessarily better than what I already have in Petr Cech, and I'm going to give both goalkeepers a chance to prove themselves. And I think that the one thing that is important is Leno's arrival could make Cech better as well.
Yeah, or rejuvenate him.
Precisely that extra competition. Cech can no longer be complacent, knowing that he's the number one keeper. He's now got to work hard for his role in the team. And it could be that he rediscovers some form from 2 or 3 years ago just because of Leno's presence behind him. So I think it's a good signing. I do think for it to be worthy of the money, he needs to be starting and he needs to not be making the mistakes that he has a tendency to make. Mm. But I do think that there's potential for this to be a very, very good signing. And for a keeper, he is still young at 26. Certainly. It's a good age.
Certainly.
Speaking of a player who's perhaps not so good an age, Socrates was signed at centre-half. Mm-hmm. He's now 30. I've watched all the pre-season games other than the behind-the-closed-doors pre-season games, and obviously conclusions drawn from these games must always be reserved a little bit and taken with a rather hefty grain of salt, but he's not looked very convincing in any of them, and I wasn't that convinced when they signed him in the first place. Do you share my worries about Socrates, or are you a bit more bullish on his outlook for the next couple of years?
I'm torn on this because I agree with you in terms of when he first arrived, I was very sceptical. I questioned his quality. It's possibly a bit harsh, but considering the poor defensive season that Dortmund had last season, and then I also questioned whether he had the athleticism required to dominate in the Premier League. And from what I've heard anyway, a lot of other defenders have been much more impressive than he has this pre-season. Although that being said, you also hear these arguments and these opinions that he was signed as a leader for that. When you look at it, it's an incredibly young back line for the most part. Arsenal's squad is very young, so you can understand from that perspective the signings of Lichtsteiner and Socrates. But even still, you have a back line which is likely to consist of Bernd Leno, Hector Bellerin. You assume Socrates is going to start.
Yeah.
Monreal, you assume, at left-back, and then I guess Mustafi's going to start also at centre-back. But then you still question where the leadership in that group comes from, because Monreal's a very quiet leader, just does his talking on the pitch. Bellerin's still young and inexperienced, especially from a defensive standpoint. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings from a character perspective. That's what I want to see from him. Whether his play matches up to that, we'll have to just wait and see. But I was very sceptical, and I still am.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've always said about the Socrates signing is that it's a very, very good price. £15 million for a centre-half who started essentially every game for his club for the last 3 or 4 years, playing in the Champions League, playing in the Bundesliga, has vast experience, is... I think he's got 70 or 80 caps for Greece. He knows European football really well. Admittedly, he's never played in the Premier League, but he's still an accomplished, experienced, established defender. And you've got him for £15 million. That's a very, very good price, even if his quality comes with a few blemishes that maybe doubt how good he can be on a regular basis. And like you said, he does offer that organisation, that communication, that leadership from the back. And even in the friendly against Boreham Wood, Arsenal were 4 or 5 nil up at this point, and he was barking instructions out at other players. And the result didn't matter. No one really cared if Arsenal won or lost. But he was still having that influential leadership at the heart of the defence, which was very nice to see. And he did actually get skinned a couple of times in that game by the Bournemouth striker. So we kind of saw both sides of him in 45 minutes, where you saw the leadership in the organisation that you talked about, and you also saw the detriments in his game as well. I think the signing is primarily based on getting Arsenal back into the top four. He's 30 years old. He's not going to be Arsenal's starting centre-half for more than maybe 3 seasons, probably 2. He's there to get Arsenal back into the Champions League, to give Callum Chambers and Mavropanos and Rob Holding another year or two to develop, and then for Unai Emery and Sven Mislintat and even Gazidis to get together and say, right, is Callum Chambers our new starting centre-half? Now he's 25, 26, and now we're back in the Champions League. Or do we need to go and sign somebody for 30, 40, 50 million pounds who's going to be our true anchor of the back four? Yeah. And if that's all he is, I think he's a perfectly fine signing. He's not very exciting, but he's perfectly fine. If they expect him to be more than that, then I do think there will be some troubles this year. And a centre-half partnership of him and Mustafi does scare me quite a lot. You have two players who are a little bit naive, a little bit overly aggressive, over-eager. Yeah. They make quite a lot of mistakes, and it doesn't. It's kind of a very typical Arsenal back four, really, which is not a good thing.
No, but this is where you hope that Unai Emery's organisation skills come to the fore in terms of what the team do collectively in order to benefit the back four. In years past, in spite of the fact that players have openly spoken about the fact that Wenger made small adjustments for every game, Arsenal were still renowned for being incredibly open defensively. So you obviously hope this season that Emery is more astute defensively and more organised defensively, so that everyone in the team benefits and works collectively in order to defend wins, points, you name it. You need to see it because in years past, I think the one, not necessarily saving grace, but one argument that you can have to defend our defenders is that they've been incredibly exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. And there has been quite a lot of support from Mustafi in the sense that quite a few people think that he'll have a very good season this year because talent-wise, he does have a lot of the attributes that you would want in a centre-half. Mm-hmm. But he's been in a team and been in a defence that has been horribly mismanaged, really. You look at the protection from the midfield, or the lack of protection from the midfield. You look at the bombing forward of the fullbacks, the rotation door alongside him. Koscielny struggled with injuries. Chambers has been out on loan and then has come in, and Mertesacker's hardly played for the last couple of years. It's not been a very easy situation for Mustafi to flourish in his first couple of years in a new team in what is basically a new league, other than a few minutes at Everton when he was 17, 18. Yeah. It isn't really a nice place for a new centre-half to be. So it's not a surprise that he's struggled. And perhaps with that better organisation, that better discipline that Unai Emery can implement, maybe we'll see the best of Mustafi, which I do believe is a good defender if he can iron out those mistakes. I guess we'll have to see. The final two additions that were made this summer, Matteo Guendouzi, a 18, 19-year-old French midfielder from Lorient for around 7 million. Again, all these prices, they're kind of that you have to have an error of about 2 million either way on them. It always depends on who leaks the report. Yeah, absolutely. And then Lichtsteiner from Juventus on a free transfer. He was the first Arsene Wenger-less signing. 34-year-old right back. Won 7 Serie A titles in a row. Played in 2 Champions League finals. He's a very, very good player. He is very old as well, but in terms of the experience and the leadership that will bring, very akin to Socrates, I think it's an astute addition for very cheap. Yeah. Is that how you see Lichtsteiner, and what do you think about Guendouzi as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'll touch on Lichtsteiner first. I think he's just going to be a sponge of information for Bayern and hopefully Jordi Asse Tutu as well, who's supposedly impressed this preseason. And you would think that they will be our two right-backs to move forward with in the long term. But, yeah, Bellerin played so many minutes last season. It's good that we have a player of that calibre, Lichtsteiner's calibre, to come in and take the pressure off of him every once in a while in these early Europa League games, in the early rounds of the FA Cup, League Cup as such. Bellerin's out injured. You get the picture. From a Guendouzi standpoint, I'd never heard of the kid before we signed him.
No.
And I still haven't been able to do much research on him at all because my summer's been a bit of a whirlwind. But regardless, I've heard good things. And when you look at our midfield, we lost Wilshere. You expect Ainsley Maitland-Niles to possibly push for a more complete midfield role this season with the departure of Cazorla and Wilshere. So it makes sense that you've signed someone who supposedly is more defensive in nature. I don't know whether that's accurate. Would that be accurate to say he's more defensive in nature, someone who picks the ball up and then distributes it from?
Looks like it. I knew absolutely nothing about him. I've only seen him against Atletico and PSG in the friendlies. Against Atletico, he was fine. He dallied on the ball a little bit and got caught in deep areas a couple of times, but he was scrappy, flew into challenges, looks pretty big, looks quite strong, and he does have a nice passing range. He was better against PSG, he moved the ball a bit quicker, and he looks to pass forward as well. So it looks like he looks quite similar to Xhaka in his ability to pass the ball. He's quite strong, he's quite happy to fly into a tackle if need be, but he probably has a little bit more athleticism than Xhaka as well, which means that you can play him at the base of the midfield on his own, knowing that he can probably just about cover the ground that he needs to. And, you know, I think he's 19, is he, something like that?
I've heard.
Take a flyer on him.
I mean,
he might develop into a world star. He's got potential, certainly, to be a very good midfielder. He might flame out and do absolutely nothing, but he's not cost a lot of money. His wages will be cheap. Arsenal can afford him. Take a flyer. Why not? If Sven Mislintat has seen something in him, if you and I, Emery, have seen something in him, then just go for it. And I don't mind signing three or four of these players every single summer, to be honest, because you only need one every 5 years to really come off.
Yeah, I mean,
for your investment to make a good return.
It's completely unrelated, but supposedly Ron Wolf, who is a former executive for the Green Bay Packers, would draft a quarterback every single year because it's the most important position for an American football team, and you give yourself such a much better success rate, if you will, of finding a starting quarterback or an elite starting quarterback if you draft or continually look to acquire one. I'm not necessarily saying that a holding midfielder is the most important position on the pitch, but if you're buying, as you said, three or four of these players every summer, you're giving yourself a really good chance of saying this guy's going to be a massive contributor in a few years' time. This one, perhaps not so much, but still will be valuable in terms of squad depth, etc.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And let's say they just become an average Premier League player. Right now, you can probably sell an average 2021-year-old Premier League player for 10, 15 million, maybe even £20 million pounds. Which can then be reinvested in other players in the squad. So they are worthwhile investments making, and I think Guendouzi is just another of many examples that Arsenal have made throughout Arsene Wenger's tenure, and it looks like they're going to continue doing so. Let's have a quick look at the departures. You mentioned a couple, we'll touch on them first. Santi Cazorla and Jack Wilshere, both of their contracts expiring. Cazorla's was out of the club's choice, most certainly. There was no new contract offered, so he was allowed to leave, and he actually returned to Villarreal. Jack Wilshere, meanwhile, was offered a new contract, but it was with the caveat that playing time may be a little bit restricted. He chose to reject it and is now at West Ham. Do you think that Arsenal could come to rue either of those departures or either of those exits, or do you think they probably came at the right time?
I mean, Cazorla's one probably came at the right time considering everything that had happened. I mean, every Arsenal fan is aware of his quality and how important he was to us, especially for a couple of seasons in particular. Wilshere, it's weird because you have sentimental attachment to these players, and in my head I'm thinking, of course they could contribute even now, but then it's this practical thing of Wilshere's often injured, couldn't nail down a regular starting spot last season, and we now, I would argue, have a more balanced team and therefore a better Arsenal team now heading into this season. So my heart says yes, my head says no. And in this situation, I think my head overrules my heart in terms of these guys would not be able to contribute effectively considering Cazorla's injury and Wilshere's sporadic brilliance, let's say.
I think you're right on the Cazorla one. I'd have loved to see him stay for one more year, just as the kind of like Per Mertesacker a couple of years ago, and last year, just as that last resort midfielder who's very experienced, and if you need him to step in when you've got a lot of injuries, you know you can rely on him, and he does offer something different to what the Arsenal midfield currently has, as that deep lying, tempo setting playmaker. But I don't think you can rue his exit. It's not a massive blow. It's just something that I would have done differently, but it's not it's not a major problem really. Wiltshire is an interesting one. If he somehow rediscovers his potential and fulfills it at West Ham, then I think there'll be quite a lot of flack coming to Unai Emery and to Sven Mislintat and to even Gazidis. The problem with that line of thinking is that if is absolutely massive, because we've been saying if Wiltshire discovers his potential for about 7 or 8 years now, and it's never really looked like coming. And this last year, he showed glimpses of it, like you said, it kind of flickered into view every now and then, but really it wasn't consistent.
Yeah.
He's now 26. He's in his prime. If he can have 2 or 3 years of good, fit, healthy football, then maybe he can get back to what he hinted at as a youngster. But really, I think that's pretty doubtful. Having said that, if it does happen, I do think Unai Emery has quite a big question to answer, really, in the sense that why didn't you give him another year or two's contract? Because it wouldn't have been very expensive. There's no transfer fee to pay. You're just offering him a new contract and he would have stayed. Why didn't you offer him another year or two just to see what you have in him?
But
maybe that's being harsh.
I think that's being harsh because, as you said, it was Wilshere's decision to leave once he discovered he was not guaranteed a starting berth week in, week out. And all credit to him. I've been very critical of Arsenal and Arsenal players in the past for not leaving the club. You look at Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain being the prime example of those supposedly stuck in a rut. Wiltshire can now go on. Yeah.
And Theo Walcott is another one.
You know, it really feels like a new era now at Arsenal because you have so many players who were associated with that old age, if you will, of not necessarily mediocrity and not necessarily failure, but frustration. It truly feels like a new era, and to be honest, part of me is not glad, but relieved in a sense that we can look past that and say we gave that a really good effort and we gave that a lot of time. We can't really say we could have done much more, so I'm happy with how the situation's played out. We have promising players coming through in the form of Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Joe Willock, Guendouzi, Emile Smith-Rowe has been impressive this preseason, and he can supposedly play in that midfield area. So hopefully one of those guys really develops and we're not left to rue the departures of two admittedly very good players.
Yeah, I think that is a key point, really, is that this Arsenal club looks very different to what it did just 18 months ago. You look at, even before the summer, you look at the departures that happened last summer and in January. Your Chesneys, Gibbs, Coquelin, Mertesacker retiring, Cazorla's now gone, Wilshere's gone, Walcott went, Chamberlain went. All these players were staples of the last 5 or 6 years under Arsene Wenger. Olivier Giroud's gone. I'm sure there's plenty more Kieran that I'm Gibbs. Missing. Yeah, all of these players were some of them were key players under Arsene Wenger, and they've all gone. And now you look at the core 5 or 6 players of this Arsenal team, and I'd say maybe 2 are from the Wenger era in Ramsey and Ozil. But you've got, say, Aubameyang, you've got Lacazette, you've got, I guess, Bellerin you could include. And then you've got somebody like Torreira and then Socrates. Arsenal is very much moving in a new direction now. And this is a very new club. And the squad has undertaken a lot of overhaul. and it's done it quite quietly. It's not been talked about that much about how different this team is to what it was just 6 months, 12 months ago. And I think you are right. I think that is a good thing, that we can draw the line in the sand now and say Arsene Wenger's era is over. This is now Unai Emery's time. Let's give him the patience and the opportunity to hone this squad as he wants to and as he sees fit. Before we take a break, I'll just ask your opinion on any more potential departures over the next, I think it's about 9 days as of recording of the transfer window. Sales, it should be said that sales can be made abroad post the August 9th deadline. So, say if David Ospina goes to Fenerbahce, or as has been potentially reported, then that doesn't have to be done by August 9th. But a replacement won't be able to find because the deadline in England has passed. So, do you think there will be any more departures over the next couple of weeks? And if so, who do you think is going to go?
Certainly, I think. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of departures, but you would think that Joel Campbell's going to leave. You would like to think Carl Jenkinson's going to leave. David Ospina, as you mentioned, Danny Welbeck's future is still uncertain. It seems as though Lucas Perez is going to stay. You expect a few more young players to go out on loan as well. So there's going to be plenty of goings, outgoings, especially, I would assume, on the deadline day. That's when a lot of loan deals tend to go through. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have plenty of activity, even if it's out the door at Arsenal Football Club, over the next 9 days or so.
Yeah, I agree. Of the kind of Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, Ainsley Maitland-Niles group, which ones would you send out on loan, if any, and which ones would you want to keep at Arsenal to try and get them as much game time as possible, even though that may be somewhat limited?
I think, depending, as of right now, I would keep Nketiah and Reece Nelson. Nelson because we seem to lack natural wingers, and Nketiah because Welbeck's future is a bit blurry. I'd send Joe Willock out on loan because our midfield is very, very is very deep in terms of squad depth. You have so many players there who are capable of starting, and whilst he may get the odd run out in the Europa League or the League Cup, you just think that he'd have more productive minutes elsewhere. But Arsenal struggled in recent years with finding a loan club who fit their playing style and their ethos of football. So again, that's another issue, but that's something completely different and that can be discussed in another podcast. But yeah, Joe Willock is someone who I'd look to send out on loan this season.
Yeah, what about Emile Smith Rowe? He's a bit younger than those guys.
Possibly. I mean, even still, if someone comes in on loan, you're not from, especially from somewhere like League One, League Two, are you really going to be excited with the prospect of sending one of your brightest talents to Scunthorpe United, where he's unlikely to be able to play with similar players with a similar brand of football, and he's going to get kicked about? It's difficult in that regard. So I would say no to Emile Smith Rowe, unless it's a brilliant opportunity like he gets to go abroad or whatnot.
Yeah, I do think that's something that Arsenal should be looking at, is beginning to loan players abroad, especially if the player himself is happy to do that and wants to go and explore football in another country, because
it's the hot thing to do right now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I do think that you could exploit that to their benefit quite greatly.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a piece recently about the Colorado Rapids and the deteriorating relationship. But that's the kind of club that, because of the Kroenke Sports, sports ownership umbrella, both clubs can under that umbrella, that you can kind of manipulate, if you will, to follow that same ethos, and thus you could benefit both clubs by having a partnership like Manchester City share with New York City FC and RB Leipzig with Red Bull, New York Red Bulls and Salzburg and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think City have got, is it Adelaide City as well?
Yeah,
or something?
In Australia.
In the Australian League. Because that's where they found Aaron Moy, isn't it? Who's a very, very good player. Finally, Aaron Ramsey, will he, yes or no, I just want a yes or no, will he sign a new contract? If he doesn't, would you sell him?
Yes.
even if you can't find a replacement in 9 days.
Yes, I mean, the thing is, I've said this on Twitter before, it's going to be so difficult because I think people are only now beginning to realise how good a player he is and how influential he is within this Arsenal team, how difficult it would be to replace him efficiently, financially and practically on the pitch, and to replace the goal contributions that he has. Is Alex Iwobi possibly ready for that? No. Is Ainsley Maitland-Niles ready for that? Probably not. But even still, you're looking around Europe and you're saying, oh, Thiago. I don't think Thiago gives you the goals that Aaron Ramsey gives you. He might give you the assist, but he certainly doesn't give you the goals, I don't think. So it's a difficult situation. I think he will sign a new deal, and obviously as a Welshman myself, I hope that he stays. But I think we're in a load of trouble if he suddenly decides, lads, I want a new challenge.
I'm off. I think he will stay. I think you're right. I think the way that players have been talking about him, Lacazette and Mkhitaryan, have both come out and called him a legend or being close to a club legend. Unai Emery has very bullishly stated that he thinks Ramsey will stay. And not in kind of political
ways,
shrouded ways. He's just said, I think he will stay, very, very plainly. That doesn't really happen if there isn't a probably 90% confidence that Ramsey will sign a new deal. So I have a feeling he will as well. But I do think, again, Arsenal have left it late. Because if he does say no, and it's still very possible, like you said, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. Because let's say they manage to get £40 million for him, which I think would be very good. I think £30 million is probably a more accurate assessment of his value with 1 year left on his contract. But let's say they manage to do really well and get £40 million. Can you sign a central midfielder in a week for £40 million who's as good as Aaron Ramsey?
No. Probably not.
It's going to be very, very difficult. And I think one thing is for certain, Arsenal will need to replace Ramsey if he goes. They do not have a player like him in
who
the
can
squad.
Immediately
especially
replace him.
Especially with Wiltshire gone and most people not believing that he would have the quality anyway. There isn't a player who's remotely similar to Ramsey, really. So this is a problem. It's probably the biggest problem over the next week to 9 days that Arsenal need to solve. I will be worried if they go into the new season without Ramsey having signed a new contract. It seems as if they may not have learned their lessons from the Alexis Sanchez, Mesut Ozil debacles of 12 months ago.
But the thing is, that Ramsey has and his camp have the leverage in terms of Wenger and the previous administration. If you will have let it come to this point, now show us that you are committed to our clients and then we'll come to terms. They have all the leverage in this situation.
Precisely. And I do think it we are going to take a break in a minute, but just a note on the contracts. Arsenal really do put their balls in a vice with these short-term contracts. They've let Wilshere and Cazorla both go for free because they weren't on longer contracts. Now, you wouldn't have got a lot of money for them, but I bet if that was Chelsea selling Jack Wilshere, they'd have probably got £10 or £15 million for him because they always sell players at their highest value. Arsenal got nothing. Same with Santi Cazorla. When it comes with Ramsey, like you said, the player and his representatives, and they know this, have all the power when it comes to that negotiating table. They can pretty much demand what they want. And if Arsenal are desperate to keep him, they have to pay it. As you saw with Mesut Ozil 6 months ago, I don't think Arsenal wanted to re-sign Mesut Ozil for £300,000 a week. I also think they wanted even less to sell both Sanchez and Ozil. I think they knew that that just simply wasn't a possibility and they had to at least sign one of them. And so they didn't have a choice. They just had to cough up the £300,000 to pay Mesut Ozil. And Mesut Ozil and his representatives knew that. So they said, well, this is our offer. These are our demands. Either match them or sell us. And Arsenal knew they couldn't sell him. And Ramsey's in a very similar position now. And these contracts will continue to hurt Arsenal as long as they exist, I think.
Yeah, I'm not really one who wants to mess with Mesut Ozil's agent. I think he would write a horrible statement about me, even though I've never met the guy.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a nice place to end up for a break, though, me fearing for my life.
I think so. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a look at what Unai Emery has been doing this pre-season and have a little look forward to the 2018-2019 season. See you in just a tick. Hello and welcome back to the second part of our season preview on the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew. I'm with Henry. Unfortunately, Josh isn't with us, but I'm sure we will defend Granit Xhaka another way. Let's look a little bit at Arsenal's pre-season thus far. We're recording this on Tuesday morning, so the game against Chelsea is tomorrow night. So if you're listening to this after the Chelsea game, there's a reason why we haven't talked about it. Because Arsenal's inevitable 6-0 win has yet to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they have played three official games and I think two behind closed door friendlies, but the details are very sketchy and no one really knows how many they've played. But in the three official games, they beat Bournemouth 8-0. They then drew with Atletico 1-1 and lost on penalties. And then they absolutely dismantled Paris Saint-Germain 5-1. Last weekend in the International Champions Cup. I didn't know that was a thing until this summer, did you?
When they had it last summer.
Oh, were they? Oh, well, I don't know, maybe. I just call them pre-season friendlies because...
Yeah, pre-season tours.
Yeah, but apparently at every... Lots of teams, lots of the best teams in Europe are playing each other all across the world and it's all in this International Champions Cup. And then there's going to be like a winner at the end. Quite why, I don't really know, but...
Money,
quite, yeah. The commercial aspect of football drives me mad. Anyway, yeah. That's what's happened so far for the Arsenal pre-season. They started training early July, and Unai Emery's been pretty busy. There have been lots of people on Twitter heralding the fact that he's got the players drinking water, for example, which is something that I'm sure Arsene Wenger never did. There have been people claiming that they all the Arsenal players look hench, which they've never done before. I don't know if that's true or not. What do you make of the apparent changes that Unai Emery has made? What do you make of the pre-season so far? And I guess kind of how do you see the overarching lessons learned over the past month to month and a half before the season gets going?
I mean, again, it's much like the players. It'll be hard to quantify until we see what occurs over the next season or so. I mean, it's all very exciting because it's new, but unfortunately, the name of the game is that we can only judge what occurs on the pitch on weekends and in competitive matchups. It's all very good and well. Things are different, and that might contribute to wins on the pitch, which is great, but that's not we're there to comment or to observe. That's for them to focus and prioritise in order so that they can win football matches,
yep.
Is my view on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pre-season is a vital part of the year.
Certainly.
But it's the bits that people don't realise are vital, are actually important, and it's the bits that everybody thinks are important aren't important. So the fact that Arsenal beat Paris Saint-Germain literally has no bearing on the season whatsoever. The fact that they lost to Atletico Madrid on penalties will have no impact on their performances this year.
No.
The things that matter are things like, do the players look sharp? Are they match fit?
Yeah.
Have they been developing well in training and getting that base fitness down for what is a long and difficult season? Especially bearing in mind that Arsenal will be playing the Thursday-Sunday Europa League schedule that can be grueling, particularly if you go deep into the Europa League as they did last year. They're the kind of things that matter. There's an added element this summer in the sense that this is a new manager and a new era and a new scheme. So what do the tactics look like? Do the players understand them? Are they executing well? I know Bellerin spoke of how he thought the team were far more comfortable in the system that Emery wants them to play against Paris Saint-Germain than they were against Atletico Madrid, even though the games are only two days apart. Because he says that every single day in training, they're learning new elements of Emery's system.
Yeah.
And you could see in both games that Emery has been out on the touchline, gesticulating, giving collective instructions to the team and to units, but also to individuals. He's been pulling players aside, and he may be only making positional differences of a few yards here and there, but this is what matters in the preseason, not the results, not even to some extent the individual performances, really. The only change that can make is kind of the confidence of the players, and maybe if a young player impresses. But really, it's about the fitness of the players, their sharpness, and then the tactics that Emery's employing. Not that that will stop most Arsenal fans from going hysterical over a 5-1 win against Paris Saint-Germain, but there we go. I guess let's frame the discussion around the preseason about how you think Emery will set up for the season to come. What formation do you play? He's obviously played 4-3-3. He's also played a kind of 3-4-3 as well. And he also played, I would call it a 4-4-2 against Paris Saint-Germain in the first half, where Ozil was pushed right up alongside Aubameyang. You could call it a 4-2-3-1 if you wanted to, but it doesn't really matter. But Ozil was played in a very advanced position. What system do you think Emery will settle on for the year ahead, and who do you think the key selection dilemmas will be in that system, assuming that he goes that way?
I think he'll continue to deploy a 4-3-3 like he's done for most of his career. I alluded to a bit of it earlier. I'd like to see a midfield trio of Torreira, Xhaka, Ramsey, Ozil drifting in off the right, Lacazette up front, Aubameyang on the left and driving inside from there. Bellerin being able to fly up the right-hand side to provide the width. And I would assume Monreal's going to start, although you could argue that Kolasinac is the better attacking player. But regardless, he's not a great defender at all.
No.
For me, it's a bit weird and a little concerning that the uncertainty begins with our defensive spine, if you will. I think Leno will start.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Callum Chambers start. And I think Sokratis is going to start, but I'd like to see Mustafi start instead. It's just, it's pick your poison, really, I guess. It's the centre-back positions.
Yeah, pick the lesser of about five evils in the Arsenal defence, quite frankly. I agree with that. I agree completely. I think one thing that may change, and I wrote about this morning, it will be published on Pain in the Arsenal today, this afternoon. Is it as simple as Mkhitaryan or Xhaka for the midfield setup, where Ozil becomes the third centre midfielder, Ramsey drops a tad deeper, and then Mkhitaryan plays on the right, as you were saying? Or does he go with the balance of Xhaka in the middle, Ozil on the right, and Mkhitaryan on the bench? I wonder if, maybe not in the big games, but I wonder if in the lesser games at home, against a Fulham or a Crystal Palace or a Newcastle, he chooses to go with the Ozil in midfield and Mkhitaryan on the right, just for that added attacking presence that he can bring. I'm not sure. I don't know which way he will go, but I do think that is probably the biggest selection. It's not an issue. It's not a problem, but the biggest selection question that is yet to be answered.
I think from a simple perspective, that is our best team from an individual ability perspective.
Yeah, precisely.
But I don't think it's the best team for Arsenal in the Premier League.
Because I think, does it upset the balance if you have
the balance is just not right. And even previously when we've played teams like Burnley at home, even last season, even though we might have won the games, we've had really sketchy defensive moments. And you can attribute that partially to the fact that we're so open and we were so aggressive going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have a nice balance if you have Ramsey driving forward, Xhaka playing a more advanced role and able to play more of a quarterback role, if you will. Torreira being that Cazorla-Kante hybrid, that's big praise, but it's what you hear constantly of that diminutive frame and that ability to turn and distribute quickly. Bellerin flying up the right-hand side. he needs to improve on his crossing and in the final third in general, but I'm sure that that will be prioritised highly by Emery, especially if this is what he indeed plans to do.
Yeah.
I just think it's so much better for the Premier League that you have the balance, because there are no gimmies in the Premier League. Simple as that. You can't go in with the mindset easy. We're not the team of Highbury where teams were beaten when they walked into the tunnel. We're not that team anymore. We're the bullseye for a lot of teams every year. Okay, Arsenal are capable of a hiccup about every couple of weeks or so. Let's go get them.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. And I do think that is the better way to set up. I just wonder if the kind of tantalising excitement of having Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Lacazette and Aubameyang all on the pitch, all at the same time, is just too much for Emery to ignore. And he's talked about he wants his team to be aggressive, press high up the pitch, to play attacking football, to be on the front foot. And I don't know if he will do this, but I question whether he will just kind of just go into screw it mode and just say, oh, do you know what, I'm just going to go for this and just play them all and see what happens. And I don't expect to see it against Manchester City on the first game of the season, but maybe against the lesser teams, or maybe in a cup competition, for example, where it's knockout and it's just one game. I wonder if he goes gung-ho, let's say, with all four players. And then obviously injuries and suspensions and fatigue and natural team rotations as the season progresses will also play a factor in all of this.
Yeah.
For me, that's the biggest decision that Emery has yet to make of, is it Mkhitaryan or Xhaka, and how does it upset the balance of the team if he goes with one way or the other? I think he knows, other than that question, I think he knows who he's playing at every single position at this point.
Yeah, certainly. For me, it's just centre-back. I mean, I'd like to see Callum Chambers be given a chance, and I think you need to play one of Mustafi or Socrates next to him. I'd like to see Mustafi, personally. But, yeah. I mean, we're just going to feel out Emery and see what his tendencies are over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm really looking forward to seeing develop.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see Callum James at centre-half. I think he'll go Socrates and Mustafi. But I would like to see Callum Chambers there. And I think he'll go Leno, and I think he'll probably go Monreal at left back as well. But
yeah,
again, we'll I hope he goes Monreal at left back, because Monreal isn't I'm not necessarily his biggest fan, but he's better than Kolasinac.
Yeah, Kolasinac, his turning circle is what does it for me, and his tendency to chase the ball.
He just can't defend. He cannot defend. He's a very good wing back, actually, and I do think.
Yeah. Wenger was so right about him. He was so right.
It's telling that Emery didn't ditch the 3-4-3 in the summer. He played it for a whole half against, I think it was Atletico he played it against. And I do think that he will use it this season against particular opponents. Let's say if Chelsea continue with three at the back, which they may not do with a new manager, but let's say they do, I wouldn't be surprised if Emery decides to switch it up and go max them man for man in a 3-4-3, because that 3-4-3 that Conte's played for all the time at Chelsea, and Sarri may continue to play, is an absolute nightmare for a back four to play against because of the matchups that it creates in the wide midfield roles.
Yeah.
If Spurs play the 3-4-3 that Pochettino sometimes plays, if Guardiola plays three at the back sometimes, if Emery wants to go a bit more defensive in the Europa League, I wouldn't be surprised if he does use that back three. And if he does, I would expect him to use Kolasinac as the left wing back, not Monreal. He may even use Monreal as centre-half, but I think Kolasinac is better in that formation. But as a left back, as a more traditional left back in a back four, he doesn't have the defensive acumen to be able to play the position properly. He's pants.
I mean, the back three would be interesting, especially away from home, because you lose possibly a distributor. So I'd like to see Callum Chambers in the middle of a back three, and then Mustafi to the right of him, Monreal to the left of him, Kolasinac as the left wing back, Bellerin as the right wing back. Nuno in goal, Xhaka Touré out, you probably are looking at dropping Ramsey or so. You're probably looking at Iwobi or Welbeck coming in for games like that as well. But yeah, we'll see. Anyway, I've had enough of speculating. It's going to drive me nuts. It is going to drive me up a wall.
We shall see. Do you like the idea of playing Aubameyang on the left? Assuming that that is what it does, because it does seem quite likely.
Yes.
Do you, as some people have suggested, feel like it's a bit of a waste having one of the best strikers of the past 3 or 4 years in the world play left wing? Not that Lacazette is a bad striker, but he's probably not in the same calibre as Aubameyang.
I don't think it's a waste, because you're asking him to contribute defensively on that side of the pitch. And Emery, from what I've read, has been he's been quite flexible in terms of rotating Aubameyang and Lacazette on that left flank. Mm-hmm. I just think we lack pace in the team without Aubameyang, and you kind of want your best players in there as well. So playing him in that regard, you're obviously going to have both of our fullbacks push high up the pitch anyway. That's another Emery staple from a tactics perspective, is that you have two midfielders who tend to lie deep. It was Motta and Verratti and Rabiot he had at Paris, and you often had two of them sitting deep. So you have those two fullbacks flying forward, inverted wingers, if you will, and Aubameyang will simply just make those runs behind from the left-hand side of the pitch. I don't think it's an issue at all. And he showed promise, if you will, from a defensive standpoint last season when he was playing on the left-hand side. He was willing to track. So I have no concerns. You've got to do what's best for the team, and this is what's best for the team, in my eyes.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think he's not playing left midfield.
Yeah.
That's for sure. It's, I guess, like Salah on the right wing for Liverpool, where he's playing on the shoulder of the defence, and he's almost like a left striker, like a left centre forward,
more than a
left midfielder or left winger, because he plays really high up the pitch, and like you say, makes those runs across and in behind the opposition defence, where he comes into a central position from out wide.
Yeah.
So I do think he'll still get his goals. He might not score as many as he may have done had he played up front, but I think him and Lacazette between them, I think Arsenal should be hoping for 40 goals from the two of them, as long as they stay fit for the majority of the season. I don't think that's an unrealistic aim. 20 each, 25, 15, something like that. That's probably what you should be expecting from two record signings over the last 12 months.
Certainly.
Let's end with the...
If Danny Willett chips in with another 10 as well, then you laugh.
Yeah, if he's there. And he'll also chip in with about 3 assists where he
off
means
his backside.
Where he means to shoot and score, but it deflects to somebody who then scores. The vision of that man. Let's move on to the aims that we have for the season. We'll start with more technical, kind of verifiable aims, and then we'll move on to kind of just what we want to see generally from this team. Would you take a season where Arsenal finish 5th or 6th, they don't win the Europa League, but they do win the FA Cup or the League Cup?
I wouldn't be happy with it, but I wouldn't be happy with it, no. I mean, silverware's great, but we all know what the intention of the club has been, and they've been so vocal in what their intentions are. That would be a letdown, not only for the fans, but for the club itself.
What about if they won the Europa League and the FA Cup, but still finished 5th or 6th and failed to win the Europa League?
Yes, I'd bite your hand off at that right now. I'd bite it. I'd take it.
Even though they wouldn't be back in the Champions League?
What, Europa League? You just said they won the Europa League.
No, they win the... they win the League Cup and the FA Cup. Sorry.
Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah.
As in, trophies are great, but they're not the trophies you want. And
No. So for you, the sole focus is get back in the Champions League by hook or by crook.
Yeah. And if you win the FA Cup and or the League Cup, then even better. But yeah, that's what the club have stated is their objective for this season. So that's, they've made their bed, now they've got to sleep in it.
I don't disagree with that. Would you rather they do it through the Premier League, or would you rather they do it through the Europa League?
I don't care how they do it. As long as they do it. Yeah. I'd prefer if they beat out Spurs in the Premier League to it, and that Spurs don't actually win anything in Europe, but touch wood, we don't have to worry about that. But hopefully they could knock Spurs out of the top four. That would be brilliant. That would actually be very nice. Yeah. Satisfying.
Let's be a bit more optimistic then. Do you think Arsenal do you think they can win the Premier League title this year?
No, I don't think so. I just think Manchester City and Guardiola will be too strong. And I just think it's so tight up there. I think whether they can get in the top four is a different matter entirely, because I think it'll be very close. Because you look at Spurs, they've got a great squad, but you still question, Harry Kane gets injured, where their goals really going to come from, or that quantity of goals going to come from. They've got great players in Song Heung-min and Christian Eriksen, and then you look at Chelsea, Morata, they don't have a striker who you fear. Really, Giroud's a great player. But you look at Hazard's a great player, but are you really going to rely on him to take the kicks at Burnley every Saturday?
No. And he might not even be there next season.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool, they've assembled a better squad. They're ones who you would assume will be in the top four next season. Manchester United the same, because in spite of all of the critics, all the criticism regarding their poor attacking football, they scored, I believe, the second most goals in the Premier League last season.
Yeah.
But again, I question whether they've done enough in this window to kick on and win the Premier League, because for a club of that stature, that's what they need to be doing, or that's what they should be doing. But I think if you're asking me to name the top four right now, City, United, Liverpool, Arsenal.
You've got Arsenal in it. Oh, dear.
Squeaking in. Squeaking in.
How high do you think Arsenal can finish then? Can they finish second? If they can't win the league, can they finish second?
No, I don't think they can.
Third?
Maybe. That's as high as I would say. As in, right. It's so close, those... From 1 until 6 is a league of its own within the Premier League.
See, I would say that all 6 can win the Premier League. I would say that Arsenal's chance is probably, let's say, 5%. And City's chance might be 30%. And Spurs' might be 10% or something like that. But I do think that all 6 can win the league. And I think, actually, all 6 could finish 6th as well. And yeah. I think they could all finish in every position between that 1 and 6. Are Arsenal the worst of the top 6?
I think they've closed the gap, because they were the worst last season for sure, but I think they've certainly closed the gap. I think you can't really
judge. I think they've closed the gap as well.
The stage.
I think they might be better than Chelsea. Especially if Courtois leaves, and especially if Hazard leaves. I think they could be better than Spurs as well.
They could be better than United as well.
United is a difficult one, where I think it could unravel quite quickly, as Mourinho tends to do.
Third year curse.
Yeah, or it could click for them. Lukaku scores 30-35 goals.
Yeah.
Alexis Sanchez finds his former Arsenal form, and suddenly they're flying again. So, I do think Arsenal can win the league. Will they win the league? Almost certainly not. Will they challenge for the league? Almost certainly not. But I don't think it's completely stupid to say that they will. And I'm usually the most negative on Arsenal. So, but maybe you're more realistic than I am. I always say Arsenal can win the league at about this time of year.
And then by Stoke's second game of the season, we realised nothing's changed. Thankfully, it won't be Jesse Rodriguez scoring a late winner. It'll be Jorginho, unfortunately.
I'm not sure who I'm more optimistic about, Arsenal at this time of year or England as they're entering a quarterfinals of the World Cup. I have complete false optimism for both every year.
I don't want to talk about England. I think this is a good place to end. I've heard enough about England as a resident Welshman. I'm glad you were knocked out.
Well, finally, before we close, what things do you want to see, not based on kind of the finish in the Premier League or winning a trophy? Could be for specific players, could be for the club or the team in general. It could be like individual goals or developments or something like that. Is there anything that you'd like to see this year?
Yeah, I just, as I said earlier, I'd like to see renewed intensity, renewed defensive stability and solidarity throughout the entire team, not just the defensive unit. Obviously, the team objective is to regain Champions League status. And then you'd want to see development from individual players, Bellerin in the final third. You want to see Torreira adapt to English football. It's the little things, but more than anything, I want to see renewed defensive stability and cohesion.
Yeah, I agree. The big two for me are players being better at the end of the year than they are at the start of the year. And some specific ones will be players like Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Alex Iwobi, Hector Bellerin, Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah. I want to see that Callum Chambers is another one. I want to see the 18, 19 through 22-year-olds be better at the end of the year than they are now, because even Gazidis talked a lot when Arsenal were looking for a new manager about we want somebody who can develop the talent that's already in the squad. And I think that's one of the key reasons why they went for Emery in the first place, was to develop the talent that's already in the squad. So now it's time for him to start developing. The other thing I really, really want to see is Arsenal press high up the pitch and have a clear plan of pressing at crucial moments and in crucial aspects of the game. Because I just feel that this team is perfectly suited to playing a high defensive line, being aggressive, winning the ball back high up the pitch, playing at a quick tempo, trying to suffocate their opponents. Just the individual players are suited to that style of play. And Emery's talked about it a lot this summer, and I'm really hopeful that he is consistent in his implementation of it throughout the year. I think, Henry, we're there.
We're done.
We're done. We are back. We're back for season two. We were a little peep behind the curtain. We were debating what episode this was because it's been so long since we last did one. And Henry came up with the far too professional but quite frankly genius idea of calling it episode 2.1, because we're into season two of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. So this is episode 2.1. My name has been Andrew, as always. I've been with Henry. Hopefully we'll have Josh with us next time. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on all the usual places at paininthearsenal.com and Twitter at paininthearsenal without the E in the. Send us any questions, any comments you have. Please let us know what you think will happen this season. And we will see you in the next couple of weeks or so. Hopefully after a big win against Manchester City. Goodbye.